Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, False Claims Act and Seal Violations Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 6, 2016, the Supreme Court decided State Farm Fire and Casualty Co. v. U.S. v. X. Royal Rigsby. State Farm Fire and Casualty Co. administered separate wind and flood damage policies in the Gulf Coast area at the time of Hurricane Katrina. In general, State Farm was responsible for paying wind damage from its own assets, while federal funds would pay for flood damage. The Rigsby sisters were State Farm claim adjusters who allegedly discovered in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina that, with respect to properties covered under both wind and flood policies, State Farm was unlawfully classifying wind damage as flood damage in order to offload the cost of payment onto the federal government. Rigsby sued on behalf of the United States under the provisions of the Federal False Claims Act and continued to litigate the case after the United States declined to intervene. The district court focused discovery and trial on a single bellwether claim, and the jury found an FCA violation and awarded damages. Both sides appealed, with the Rigsbys, classified under the FCA as relators, seeking additional discovery to uncover and pursue other similar FCA violations by State Farm, and State Farm arguing, among other things, that the case should be dismissed because the Rigsbys' counsel had violated the FCA seal requirement by disclosing the existence of the FCA lawsuit to various news outlets. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit acknowledged the seal violation, but concluded, as the district court had, after applying a multi-factor test, that the breach did not warrant dismissal here. The question before the Supreme Court was what standard governs the decision whether to dismiss a relator's claim for violation of the False Claims Act's seal requirement, an issue on which the Federal Circuit Courts of Appeals have split three ways. By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Fifth Circuit. In an opinion by Justice Kennedy, the court unanimously held that a seal violation does not mandate dismissal of a relator's complaint under the False Claims Act, and that whether to dismiss is a matter left to the discretion of the district court. In this case, the Supreme Court added, the district court did not abuse its discretion in declining to dismiss the relator's complaint. To discuss the case, we have Lawrence Ebner, who is the founder of Capital Appellate Advocacy. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Ebner.
First, I'm going to provide some general background on the False Claims Act QTAM provisions. I will then discuss the background of the State Farm case. I will, after that, summarize the Supreme Court's unanimous opinion in the case and finally provide some commentary of my own on the opinion. So let's begin with False Claims Act QTAM background. The False Claims Act creates civil liability for knowingly submitting to the federal government a false or fraudulent claim for payment or approval, or a false record or statement that is material to a false or fraudulent claim. The QTAM provisions, which are set forth at 31 U.S. Code Section 3730, allow private party whistleblowers, known as relators, to file a False Claims Act action, quote, for and quote, in the name of the United States. That's why when you see the captions of these cases, it's United States X. Rel. Rigsby. The Rigsbys are the relators in the State Farm case. The goal of the QTAM provisions, which were modernized in 1986, is to augment the Department of Justice's limited resources by encouraging private enforcement suits for fraud against the government. If a QTAM suit is successful, a QTAM defendant can be liable for treble damages, plus hefty civil penalties, plus attorney fees and costs. The United States, through the Justice Department, can intervene at any time and take over primary responsibility for pursuing a QTAM suit. What I'd like to emphasize is that QTAM litigation can be very lucrative for relators and their counsel. By statute, and this is an incentive for encouraging private enforcement suits, by statute, if the government intervenes, a district court can award the relator between 15 and 25% of the proceeds or settlement. If the government declines to intervene, which is usually the case, a district court can award the relator between 25 and 30% of the proceeds or settlement. And relators' attorneys, who almost always are contingency fee counsel, typically collect between 30 and 50% of the relator's recovery. And I think that probably explains the explosive growth of what we call the QITAM bar, which is probably second only to the class action bar in terms of creativity and aggressiveness in suing corporations in the United States. According to Justice Department statistics, total QITAM judgments and settlements between 1987 and 2015 were over $33 billion. There's tremendous pressure on defendants to settle QITAM suits prior to trial and avoid both the financial and reputational risks of being held liable for defrauding the United States government. And what that means, because of the pressure to settle, what that means is that relators and their counsel can collect huge bounties without ever having to prove fraud to a court, and sometimes without even having to meet the Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 9B fraud pleading requirements, which, as you know, are quite stringent. Let me give you a few more key facts by way of background. The yearly number of QITAM suits has more than tripled during the past 15 to 20 years. Since 1987, more than 10,000 QITAM suits have been filed, and more than 700 of them were filed just during 2016. The key targets of QITAM relators and their counsel are the healthcare industry, government contractors, federal grant recipients, and virtually any company or organization that gets paid or reimbursed by the federal government. Another key fact to keep in mind is that following investigation of a relator's allegations, the Justice Department intervenes in only about 25% of QITAM suits. And statistics show that judgments and settlements are much higher when the Justice Department does intervene. Since 1987, judgments and settlements have been $31 billion in intervened QITAM suits versus only $2 billion when the government does not intervene. And similarly, relator awards are much higher when the government intervenes. A total over the years of $5 billion when the government intervenes versus only a little more than half a million when the government does not intervene. Last year, 2016, was a banner year for QITAM suits. The government recovered almost $3 billion in QITAM settlements and judgments, and of that, $519 million went to relators and their counsel. Now, with that background, on QITAM litigation, not only the statutory scheme in general, but also the aggressiveness with which these suits are pursued, let me talk about the State Farm case. The State Farm case involved the QITAM file under seal provision, which Congress added to the False Claims Act in 1986 as part of reform legislation, which, as I said, was intended to encourage more QITAM suits to supplement the government's own False Claims Act efforts. The seal provision, which is at Section 3730B2, states that, and I'm reading, a copy of the complaint and written disclosure of substantially all material evidence and information the relator possesses shall be served on the government. The complaint shall be filed in camera and shall remain under seal for at least 60 days and shall not be served on the defendant until the court so orders. As a practical matter, the QITAM seal provision gives the Justice Department an opportunity to investigate a relator's allegations and decide whether to intervene. According to the Justice Department, Congress added the seal requirement at its request and solely for the Justice Department's benefit, in order to prevent tipping off an unknowing QITAM defendant about a pending federal criminal fraud investigation, which sometimes go hand in hand with civil QITAM litigation. They wanted to avoid tipping off a defendant, thereby enabling the defendant to try to thwart or evade the government's investigation. And as a practical matter, the Justice Department can and often does request multiple time extensions beyond that initial 60-day seal period to conduct its investigation, often in conjunction with affected federal departments and agencies that prepare reports. So the issue, the specific issue in the State Farm case, was whether a seal violation by a relator or her counsel requires automatic dismissal of the relator's QI-TAM suit. And when you look at the Supreme Court's opinion, which I'll discuss in detail in a few moments, I think that the Supreme Court misstated the issue by asking whether, quote, any and all violations of the seal requirement mandate dismissal. Specifically, the State Farm relators were insurance claim adjusters. They worked for a company hired by State Farm to adjust Hurricane Katrina-related property damage claims. The claims at issue arose under federal government-backed insurance policies that covered flood damage and general homeowner insurance policies that covered wind damage. The gravamen of the relator's complaint was that State Farm instructed the adjusters to misclassify wind damage as flood damage in order to shift the ultimate insurance obligation to the federal government. They filed their QI-TAM suit in camera in April 2006 in the Mississippi Federal District Court, and as required by the statute, served the Justice Department with their complaint and with a written factual disclosure under seal. In January 2007, the district court partially lifted the seal to allow disclosure of the suit to an Alabama district court in a tangentially related matter. And in August 2007, the district court fully lifted the seal. In January 2008, after investigating the relator's fraud allegations against State Farm, declined to intervene in the case, leaving it to the relators themselves and their counsel. Now, it's beyond dispute that prior to lifting of the full seal, the relator's counsel deliberately disclosed the suit and its allegations to a number of national media organizations, to a member of Congress, and to a public relations firm. As a result, in January 2011, State Farm moved to dismiss the suit on the ground that the seal had been violated deliberately. The district court denied the motion to dismiss based on the Ninth Circuit balancing test involving three factors: the harm to the government, the severity of the violations, and the evidence of bad faith. That was the United States XRL Lujan versus Hughes Aircraft case, a 1995 Ninth Circuit decision. Judgment was rendered after State Farm in the district court following a bellwether trial involving one home. The Fifth Circuit, utilizing the same three Lujan factors, affirmed the district court's denial of dismissal of the suit. The Fifth Circuit held that the Justice Department had not been harmed because the violations came after partial lifting of the seal, that the violation was not as severe as failing to file the suit at all under seal, and that the violation was committed by the relator's counsel, not by the relators themselves. After inviting the views of the Solicitor General, who opposed an automatic dismissal rule for QI-TAM seal violations, the Supreme Court granted certiorari. Oral argument was held on November 1st, 2016, and if you look at the Federalist Society page announcing this teleforum, you can see a link to my post-hearing analysis of that hearing, as well as to the government's merit stage amicus brief. On December 6, 2016, a unanimous eight-member court issued its opinion, authored by Justice Kennedy. The court held that dismissal for QI-TAM seal violations is not mandatory, but instead should be left to the discretion of a district court in each case, and the court further held that the district court did not abuse its discretion here in the State Farm case, despite the relator counsel's flagrant violations of the seal requirement. The court's analysis of the mandatory dismissal issue was concise, and let me give you a quick summary of it. The court said that the False Claims Act does not enact so harsh a rule, that although the seal requirement is a mandatory rule, the statute says nothing about a remedy for violation of that rule, and that if Congress had intended dismissal for a seal violation, it knew how to say so and would have said so in the statute. The opinion further says that because the seal requirement was intended to protect the government's interests, it would make little sense to adopt a rigid interpretation that prejudices the government by depriving it of needed assistance from private parties. And the court noted that the Solicitor General agreed. In fact, the Solicitor General argued that an automatic dismissal rule would undermine the government's interests and provide a defendant with a windfall. Here's a quote from the government's amicus brief, quote, "An automatic dismissal rule would exacerbate the government's injury, depriving the government of the potential recovery from the relator's suit, forcing the government either to devote resources to pursuing the claim itself or to allow possible fraud to go unredressed." The opinion indicates that even though every seal violation does not mandate dismissal, that sanction remains a possible form of relief, and that that question, the question of whether it should be dismissal or what sanctions should be imposed for seal violation, should be left to the district court's sound discretion. The court concluded its opinion by stating that although the Lujan factors, quote, appear to be appropriate, these and other relevant considerations can be discussed in the course of later cases. So the court did not even squarely adopt the Lujan three-factor test. Let me offer some comments, some of my own comments and observations about this opinion. First, I believe that the court's holding undermines rather than reinforces the integrity of the QI-TAM scheme, including specifically the seal provision. It undermines the Justice Department's QI-TAM gatekeeper function by sending the wrong message to relators and to the QI-TAM bar. It basically promotes gaming the system, gaming the QI-TAM system, such as by using public disclosure to short-circuit the government's investigation and to pressure a defendant to settle before the Justice Department decides whether the relator's allegations warrant intervention. And remember what I said earlier. The government intervenes in only about 25% of the cases. So, when the government does not intervene, relator recoveries are much lower than in the unusual circumstance where the government does intervene. So being able to pressure a defendant into settling a QI-TAM suit before the government decides whether to intervene very well may work in the favor of the relators and their counsel. And I think that it also short-circuits the Justice Department's ability to settle directly with the defendant, even if the relator objects. And all that by using public disclosure, albeit in violation of the seal requirement, as a pressure tactic, because the defendant's going to want to mitigate financial and reputational harm flowing from publicity surrounding the fraud against the government allegations. Another observation about the opinion is that it fails to distinguish between negligent seal violations, for example, if there's been an inadvertent or de minimis disclosure or where a relator's attorney doesn't even know about the seal requirement, and a deliberate and egregious seal violation by an unscrupulous attorney or relator, as in the State Farm case. At the hearing in the State Farm case, Justice Alito commented that it would be difficult to imagine a worse example of a bad faith seal violation. Nonetheless, the government tried to downplay the deliberate seal violation in this case, calling it minor compared to not filing a QTM suit under seal at all. In my opinion, the government has this exactly backwards. I think that a deliberate seal violation, as in the State Farm case, is far worse than an inexperienced attorney negligently failing to file a QTAM suit under seal. Another observation is that the opinion is disappointingly narrow because it does not squarely articulate the standards that lower courts should utilize in determining whether dismissal or some other sanction should be imposed for a QTAM seal violation. It does not resolve the inter-circuit split of authority that led to the granting of certiorari in the first place. And I think most importantly, the opinion provides no guidance on how to assess or weigh the actual harm or potential harm to the government resulting from a seal violation. As you recall, the first factor in the Lujan test is the harm to the government. But in cases where the government does not intervene, which is a case in 75% of QTAM suits, how can a district court determine whether the Justice Department was harmed by a seal violation? It's unlikely the government is going to talk about its confidential investigation or its reasons for not intervening. In this case, the government said it wasn't harmed, but it had been invited by the Supreme Court to file an amicus brief expressing its views. If the government doesn't intervene, it's going to be left to conjecture on the part of the parties in the district court to what extent, if any, or how seriously the government was harmed. And yet that's the first factor that the Supreme Court in this opinion said would be appropriate for consideration in deciding what sanction, including dismissal, should be imposed. The opinion does acknowledge that the petitioner and its amici in this case place great emphasis on the reputational harm that False Claims Act defendants may suffer when the seal requirement is violated. And in fact, I had the privilege of submitting an amicus brief for DRI, the voice of the defense bar, and in our brief, we emphasized that the seal requirement is not just to protect the government's interests, but also to protect the interests of the unknowing defendant who is the subject of unproven fraud allegations in a complaint that's supposed to be maintained under seal while the government investigates and decides whether the allegations have enough merit to warrant Justice Department intervention. The court, in its opinion in State Farm, seems to have left the door open to considering defendants' reputational harm as a factor that the district court can utilize in determining what sanction to impose. But again, there's no indication in the opinion how much weight to give that factor. As I argued in the amicus brief that I submitted, a defendant's reputation can be seriously, if not irreparably, harmed by mere allegations of fraud against the government. Remember, this isn't just a breach of contract situation. This is an accusation of defrauding the United States government. And it can result, for example, in loss of eligibility to bid on government contracts or to participate in government programs such as Medicare or to qualify for federal grants. And as I think I mentioned earlier, the Solicitor General's amicus brief repeatedly asserted that the seal requirement was not designed to protect the defendant's reputation, but just to protect the government's investigatory interests and only those interests. But there is contrary legislative history. The Senate report that the opinion cites in a number of places states explicitly that sealing the initial private civil false claims complaint protects both the government and the defendant's interests without harming those of the private relator. And I guess my final observation before we open it up for questions is that the opinion seems to criticize the petitioner in, seems to criticize the petitioner, in other words, State Farm, in this case, for not asking district court to impose an alternative remedy in the event that its motion to dismiss was denied. So, if nothing else, there is some practical advice that flows out of this opinion, which is that if you are representing a defendant in a QI-TAM suit and there is a seal violation, by all means seek dismissal for the seal violation, but request in the alternative other remedies, perhaps a percentage reduction in the relator's award, if there is an award, or attorney discipline as an alternative to dismissal if the court feels that dismissal is not warranted.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.fedsoc.org/multimedia.